Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Wherever you are, this is the Interpreter's Workshop Podcast. I'm Tim Curry, your host. Here we talk everything sign language interpreting. The ins, the outs, the ups, the downs, the sideways of interpreting. If you're a student, a new interpreter, experienced interpreter, this is the place for you. If you want to know more, go to interpretersworkshop.com. Let's start talking interpreting. And now, the quote of the day by American science fiction author Frank Herbert. Technology is both a tool for helping humans and for destroying them. This is the paradox of our times, which we're compelled to face. In today's episode, we continue the conversation with Amaresh Gopalakrishnan, the CODA sign language interpreter from India. We talk a little bit more about the sign language interpreting profession, including ethics, working conditions, about how the Sign Language Interpreting Association came to be in India. And we delve a little bit into culture, developing as an interpreter, questioning CODA identity, and of course, technology. Let's get started. When was the year that the Sign Language Interpreting Organization was established?
I believe 2008. We had an initial conference where we decided to set this association up.
Yeah.
A few interpreters in India, we came together in 2008. We decided to set this up, and officially it was registered much later, I think around 2014. We started work as early as 2008. Yeah.
What started this idea to do it?
It's probably because of two things. First thing is, after we started off the course, the diploma course, so we were producing a few interpreters. We needed to have a body or an agency to offer support to these interpreters in case they needed any kind of support after they complete the course. So we had a lot of interpreters coming back saying that they were finding difficulty in finding jobs or work, and they're not getting paid well and stuff like that. So we had a lot of issues. So we felt that we needed to have a body to try and support the interpreters in India to try and make this into a proper profession.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So that is probably one of the main reasons, of course. Secondly, because there was Wasli, there we had interpreter associations in other countries. So that probably triggered the thought process also that we should have the association so that we can actually take part in international conferences, international events, stuff like that. So we get to have some kind of authority or voice to take part in these events. Yeah.
When was it that you first had contact with interpreters from other countries and you started learning about it as a profession outside of India?
I'm trying to remember the first time I met an interpreter from outside India. Initially, when we started off the diploma courses and when I was training interpreters, we had a lot of international students in my institution. So we had students from the Maldives, we had students from Vietnam, from Indonesia. So we trained interpreters for them. And we trained, they learned Indian sign language. But mainly, we trained them more on interpreting skills. How to interpret and those kind of things. So rather than sign language per se. So, yeah, of course. So I had a lot of contact with I trained some of the international interpreters who are working now. So it started off very early, but working with international interpreters, I mean, interpreters from outside India, working with them probably was much later. I would say when I started off with international sign interpreting, so it's probably after that obviously we work with a co-interpreter who's from another country. So probably that's how I started working with interpreters outside India. But I think I've been in touch with interpreters outside India for a very long time. So
it was just kind of a natural...
It's a natural progression. So because you're always in this field, you're always... you do a lot of work in India in this field. So you obviously try and connect with people abroad to get ideas, to get information, to get knowledge, to get inputs, you know, to improve the training and improve the curriculum and stuff like that. So,
yeah, that makes sense. Natural progression, trying to find out information that you don't have, it might be out there somehow. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Has the interpreting organization or the interpreting community found that the deaf community is supportive and working with you in some way or pushing you in some way?
There's always been the positives and negatives also in this, you know, in this question when you ask the positives and negatives, you know, like the deaf community have been very receptive, they're being very accepted. They accept the interpreter, they work with the interpreter very well, and there have been instances. There have also been instances where they did not like the interpreter and they pushed them off.
Yeah.
So it completely depends on the interpreter, what kind of skill he or she has.
Yeah.
And whether they're doing a good job, professional job, or whether they have some kind of hidden agenda behind something like that. So the most important thing is once they form the trust, then you're in.
Yeah.
You know, so to build that trust, it takes time. So the community, they might, you know, like use you once or twice. They will judge you, see how you're performing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after the work is done. If you can keep your mouth shut, you can keep your mouth shut and not disclose things to others, you know. Yeah. It happens a lot in India. Like, it's just a very gray area, I could say.
Yeah.
We have interpreters who are coders. Even I would put myself in that category too. Initially, even I was like that. So I thought that I could help the deaf community, you know, the word help.
Yeah.
Assist them, you know, like help them improve the standard and stuff like that. Because you get to know a lot of things when you interpret, you get a lot of information.
Yeah.
So you tend to, you know, spill that information over to the deaf community and try to encourage them to do something. And
yeah.
So, for example, if you have a meeting with a government official, you know, and the deaf people, they have probably limited knowledge of how the government works and how, well, what kind of points to put forth. So after the meeting is over, so I interpret in the meeting, fine. After the meeting is over, so I have a lot of ideas. You know, like, which I can give it to them so that I can use it in the next meeting and stuff like that. So you know, it's so natural that you being in the deaf community for such a long time.
Yeah.
Now, it's so natural that you say that to them, you know, you give that input to them. So you can do this and do that, and you try to give them certain advice and all that. There's a lot of interpreters who do that. Even I used to do that, but then I learned it the hard way, and I said, okay, I need to stop this.
Yeah.
You know? So they need to learn. If they want, they can ask. So not as an interpreter, but as Amrish, if they want to ask me as a person, as Amrish, if they want to get my advice separately, then I can give it to them.
Yeah.
Unless and otherwise I'm asked, and it's just none of my business. I'm just a trap shot. And after the assignment's done, just forget about it. Yeah. So that maturity has evolved now. But initially, you know, when you are younger, you have that hot blood in you, you want to do stuff for the community, you see that things are not improving, and you know you can do it, you have the capability of to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's friction, sometimes it doesn't happen, sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's negative, there's friction, so all that happens. So it's very important as an interpreter, you need to understand where your limits are.
Mm-hmm.
So once you do that, you can slowly start gaining the trust of the deaf people, the deaf community. So once they know that, you know, after the assignment is done, you're not discussing this with anyone, not even to them, that they like, that you give the agency to them. So they have to think, they have to do their own kind of research and whatever. So if they fail, they fail and they learn, right?
Yeah.
If you just disturb that process, I mean, you don't know how they are thinking internally, you know?
Exactly.
It depends on all that. So the deaf people, they see you, they look at you, they observe you. And if they find that you are doing a good job and they trust you, they love to use you all the time. Yeah.
In most countries where I've gone, most people always say, you know, the interpreting community, the deaf community, they're small communities.
Yeah.
You know, word gets around quickly. But you have 18 million deaf and 1,000 interpreters, which is more than many countries, actually, on both sides. Do you feel the same thing, that it's a small community and it spreads quickly?
Well, 18 million may sound a lot, but when you see it, you know, like in terms of the population of India, it's still still 1 or 2% of the population. So relatively speaking, I would still say it's a small community, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever happens in other countries, we have that in India too. All the backbiting and stuff like that. So all that happens, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, in Europe, and in the U.S., technology has really allowed the deaf community to communicate via video in many ways, many different apps. Do you see the same thing in India?
Yeah, definitely. So in India, as you know, India is famous for IT and technology. So it's very easy over here for technology to take its place over here. So deaf people definitely use that a lot, and not only communicating with other regions within India, but also internationally. So now, it's, you know, like the world has opened up for them. They can access, they're able to access people from across the globe, the other side of the world. They're able to communicate with them.
So has that affected interpreters as well? Do you interpret remotely sometimes for other states in India?
Yeah, definitely. We do that. Yes, we do that. So we definitely do that. So I get a lot of requests from other states in India for interpreting. So I do that remotely online. So that happens a lot. And we also have, I think it's a company just started the video relay services.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have a firm who's trying to do that. So, internally, we use WhatsApp to call the interpreter, and the interpreter calls whoever you want to contact and speaks to them and interprets for you. So, all that is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, technology has helped a lot.
Yeah. Thank you to all the hundreds of people following this podcast. If you want to hear from interpreters around the world and get the latest episodes, follow the podcast in your app. Just check out some of the links in the show notes to help you with that. Thank you. Now let's go back. So let's do some word association where I tell you a word or a phrase, and then you come up with the first thing that comes into your mind, whether it's a word or a phrase or a story. A concept that comes to your mind, and we'll go from there. Okay.
So it's something like a rapid fire round, or something like that.
Yeah.
So you say something, and the first thing that comes to my mind. Yeah.
Say it. Or if it's a story, or if there's many things, or yeah.
Okay. Sure.
All right. Let's start off with comfort food.
Curd rice.
Say that again.
We have something called curd rice over here.
Colored rice.
Curd, C-U-R-D, curd.
Curd rice,
yeah. So we have that. We mix curd with rice and add a little salt and probably add a little bit of spices and it. So it really soothes your stomach and it's very good for your health.
Yeah,
curd rice, yeah. That's definitely one thing I would love. You know, when my stomach is upset, then just turn to curd rice and it helps you.
Ah.
Home remedy.
Okay, I will look that up myself. I've never had that. I've had both curds or rice, but not together.
Together, yeah.
Okay, next. Pet peeve.
I'm trying to think. I don't have anything as such.
Oh, you're one of those perfect people. Okay.
I wouldn't say perfect.
Okay. No, that's good. Next, language.
Expression.
Expression. Okay. Next, fun.
Travel.
Travel. Oh, yeah. Okay. Interpreting.
Passion.
Passion. Okay. Next, coda.
Well, coda, how do you say that in one word? I'm trying to find a word.
It's okay. You can say it in many words.
Who am I?
Who am I?
What's my identity? Identity crisis.
Are you still questioning that?
I don't know. I don't know whether I would belong to either the hearing community or the deaf community and how. Still struggling with it. Yeah.
So you're just the CODA community then? Yeah?
The CODA community, of course. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Next, technology.
Technology, maybe destruction.
Destruction?
Yeah, destruction.
Why do you say that?
I mean, if you see the latest technology that we have, it destroys lives, you know, like smartphones. When you see children are stuck with their smartphones, they don't play outside and stuff like that. The technology, you can do a lot of bad things. It can just destroy a person's life.
Yeah.
So more than it has helped, it has destroyed lives. I would say that. You see the wars going on. You see, so many negative things have happened because of technology. Yeah. Probably if you didn't have this kind of technology, you'd still be a better place.
Wow. CODA philosopher. That's nice. Wow.
Well, you asked.
Oh, yeah. No, I wanted the answer. That's beautiful.
No, I didn't say technology is always destructive, but.
Sure.
More than helping, it has kind of had a negative impact.
Yeah. So you say it hurts the society by being disconnected from each other, or?
I would say it disconnects people. It connects people, it does both.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say technology itself is destructing. It's how people use it, which is very, if people use it in a negative way, then it's very destructive. Why I mention technology as destructive is because of how we are, of how people are.
Mm-hmm.
So because of technology, many of the negative traits are coming out. We see a lot of negative traits going around, a lot of negative news going around. So it affects people, it affects society. It, small misinformation, it would create chaos.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that. So if people are responsible, if they are mature enough to know how to use technology in the proper way, then maybe, you would say technology's really helped people, it's made lives easier, stuff like that.
Mm.
As humans, we have, developed technology. As technology has progressed, it has very, very bad side effects, very, very negative side effects on the environment, on people, on society. So, that's why.
Okay. All right. Next, culture.
Life.
Why?
When you see different cultures, you feel alive.
Mm.
You go to a different culture, you learn something, you learn about life, about how their living is and stuff like that. So you learn about life. Go to a different culture, you see how they are, what kind of things they do, what kind of perception they have. So you learn more about life.
Mm.
So it's about, you learn how to be a person, be a better person.
Yeah.
You respect different cultures and stuff like that. So each and every culture has their own unique perspective, their unique traits. You know? So you learn a lot. You know? So when you learn more about yourself and you learn more about life itself. Life is just not a small place. Life is vibrant. Life is like, it's colorful, it's vibrant, it's different, it's varied. So you experience all that. So when you experience all that, you live your life completely. That's what I feel.
Hmm. Sounds like one of the reasons you like travel.
Of course, definitely. You know. So recently I've been back from Thailand. In fact, I was initially, it was a very short stay, but I had to extend my stay in Thailand because, you know, I want to see the culture. You know, I want to visit different parts of Thailand. Even in that small country, you have different cultures in the north and south. You want to experience the culture. You want to experience culture. You want to experience life. How's life there? How's life with you? So you want to experience that. So you live. When you go there, you live and you have a different experience. You try and see how you can live in that kind of culture and learn a lot. You live your life. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it natural when you're traveling to other countries that you meet other CODAs or interpreters or deaf community?
Yes, it's very natural. You know, it's quite natural. So when I travel, it's mainly, it's more work-related. So get interpreting assignments that I travel abroad. Otherwise, I can't afford to travel. So I only travel when I'm invited for work, you know.
Yeah.
So you normally, you know, like when that happens, then we are within the community itself. So you meet deaf people, you meet other interpreters. So.
Sure.
So you learn about the deaf community there, or also about the hearing community, about the general culture of the region. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay. Let's see. Next. Ethics.
Responsibility.
Okay. Which means?
See, ethics are probably certain pointers, which I assume become a responsible person. You know? If you work in a certain area and you follow the ethics or code of that particular area, so you become more responsible and more mature to work in that particular field. So you should understand other people, how they are feeling, and what is your limits, and you know where you what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. So it makes you a more responsible person. You understand how you need to behave in a certain way. So it helps you to become a more responsible human being.
So many little gems of information that we got today. Let me try to wrap it up for us to take home. Some of you listening may understand how the Interpreting Association was formed. It may not be unique to India for a sign language interpreting organization to begin based on the needs of the new interpreters being developed. But it also makes us think about why you want to be a part of a sign language interpreting association. The support. There are issues about pay, working conditions, ongoing education. Who do you turn to as an interpreter to help you with these issues? Where do you find support? That's where a sign language interpreting association or organization comes into play. Most of us are working alone most of the time, and we think we're doing just fine. We don't need interpreting courses. We don't need support. We've been doing it for so long, we can do without that. But I know from experience that when you work with someone in a team that it just meshes, it's just great, that feeling helps boost your passion for the interpreting profession again, for our work. The services that we provide are given more meaning again. And that one little feeling from teaming with someone that really works well with you can be found in a sign language interpreting organization. You can find that feeling of support, that feeling of meshing with those who know what you're talking about, how you're feeling about your work. It's a community. It's a culture. It's a sense of belonging. When you're new to the profession, you have all the answers. You think you know what's going on. You think you know how to handle the ethical issues. But as Amaresh said, we don't really understand the complexities of what's going on. Working with others in the profession, in the association, you learn. When you travel, when you meet new people in this profession, when you meet new clients in different regions, different cities, different countries, you learn a little bit more. You see deeper in the culture of life, the culture of living. And that's when you look back at yourself. Knowing who you are is reflected by those around you. So try that new language. Try walking down that street. Meet those people at the next table and enjoy your curd rice to get that comfort feeling of a new culture and a new life. So until next time, keep calm, keep your mouth shut, and keep interpreting. I'll see you next week. Take care now.